You're listening to Stonecast, Curling in the Twin Cities, with Jordan Wickland and Christopher Lisney.
Today, we interview Darcy Ellerby, a founding member of the Dakota Curling Club. If you want to send us feedback, go to our website, stonecast.rocks. Click on the About Us button and fill out the form to send us a message. It's the middle of July, and we're talking to Darcy Ellerby, 2016 USA Women's Arena Nationals runner-up.
That's right. And I was the gold medal champion in 2013.
Ooh, that's better. And a prime number year. That's good.
Yeah.
That counts for something.
It was the inaugural year, so I went to that tournament not expecting anything because it had no track history, and I was just amazed that we did as well as we did, and it was a really fun time.
That's great.
Can you tell us a little bit about this last time around? I noticed that you had a non-Minnesotan on your team.
I did. I had
an import ringer.
Exactly. Sandra just recently joined our club.
Who was on the team?
So Sandra McMakin was my vice, and then I had three other players who were all really very novice and had essentially no experience at all with any competitive curling. So it was Lisa Novak, Leslie Adair, and Trish Elliott. And all three of them were fairly new members at my club and had no exposure to any competitive curling. But Sandra has 40-plus years of curling experience, and she's a certified level 3 coach, I believe. And she spent a lot of time with the team in practice before we went to the event, and I was amazed at how quickly some good quality coaching brought the overall skill level of the team up. And again, once again, we surprised ourselves in doing as well as we did. Funny story is that when we got to the gold medal game in 2013, we were playing against a really excellent team from California by a skip named Sarah Walsh. And we got to the last game and we prevailed and Sarah took silver. And then when we showed up in 2016, as we start following the ranks through, I realized that Sarah and I are going to meet each other in the gold medal game again in 2016. And so we did. And of course, her team played just tremendously well. And we did not show up as much as we could have. I think we were tired at that point. And so they won this gold this time and we took silver. And as we were leaving the ice, Sarah smiled at me and said, well, I guess now we're even.
Can you tell us a little bit about the background of the Dakota Curling Club?
Sure.
Because you were integral in the background.
I think you could say that, yes. Yeah. We started the club, my husband Paul and I, back in 2006. And we had... At that time, the only curling club in the Twin Cities was the St. Paul Curling Club. And we had started to curl together just after we got married, and we tried to get into the St. Paul Club, but they were essentially full, and you could get in only with whole teams. It was difficult to get in as individuals. So the next closest club for us was Owatonna, and we live in Burnsville. So we would drive down to Owatonna about 45 minutes, and 45 minutes back at midnight. And the more we got into curling and the more we enjoyed it together, eventually we were curling like 3 or 4 nights a week in Owatonna. And it just became unbearable. So we had been throwing around the idea of working with the Twin Cities Curling Association to open another curling club. And eventually Paul and I decided to just sort of take a risk and open the Dakota Club in an arena and see what happens. It was somewhat of a, if you build it, they will come kind of a risk. And so we were just blown away by the amount of interest. I think we had 160 members play with us that first year, and it was sort of an instant success. And it's just been going ever since.
Well, it's great that you started that a few years kind of before the media zeitgeist really struck the general kind of American psyche. Like, you know, people all of a sudden want to curl, and we live in a great area for it. Certainly, you know, maybe the best in the States. And, you know, you're already up and running. It's like, well, our doors are open.
So right.
That's fantastic.
So essentially from the beginning, we have been at or near capacity from the beginning. Because we're an arena club, we only get to curl one day a week, and so we have limited number of slots. And for the first 6 years or so of our existence, we actually only had spring ice. We didn't even have ice during the fall or winter. So it was even more limited. We would have just ice for like 8 to 10 weeks between March and June. But now we have a full, like, regular 20-week season.
You mentioned when you were first starting the Dakota Curling Club that you were in association with the TCA or the Twin Cities Curling Association. If at the time there was only one curling club, why was there a Twin Cities Curling Association?
The Twin Cities Curling Association was formed for the purpose of helping to expand curling in the Twin Cities, and their mission was to open new curling clubs.
Ah.
How do they do that? Or how are they funded? How, like, or is it just kind of a... did it exist at that time? Was it more like a voluntary organization? I mean, I know it's still a voluntary organization.
Yeah, but it's 100% voluntary, and I haven't been affiliated with them for probably 10 years, so I don't know anything about their current state at all. So at the time Paul and I were associated with the Twin Cities Curling Association, their main focus was on establishing a second dedicated club. And so they were interested in raising several $1 million and building a really nice dedicated facility, and which I think was a great mission. But Paul and I had more immediate goals, and that's really the reason why we left that organization, decided to just see what happens if we open an arena club. And it was a successful experiment, and we just have sort of diverged since then.
Do you then, when you start a club like that, then do you just like register with like USA Curling? Then your members pay curling dues just like everybody else?
Yep.
And do they give you support?
We actually get quite a lot of support from US Curling Association. I think most clubs, especially well-established clubs like St. Paul that don't need a lot of support from the national organization, maybe aren't as appreciative of what they're doing for curling in general. But I think we're now at the point where perhaps 50% of the clubs in the U.S. are arena clubs. Hmm. And there's a ton of support that you get from the U.S. Curling Association. So, for example, when we needed to buy rocks, we bought our rocks through a no-interest loan program through the USCA. So we got our rocks for 2 years with no charges at all. So time to build some membership and mm-hmm. build money.
So you're like leasing them, essentially.
No, we own them now.
You own them now.
Yes.
Yeah.
But so in the loan program, you got them at no cost to you for 2 years, and then you paid out the cost of the rocks over a five-year period with no interest.
Oh, nice.
So it just let us spread out the cost of acquiring our rocks. So that's a really good example. They also have started hosting something called the Business of Curling Symposium, which I attended in Portland, Oregon last year. And then another member of the Dakota board attended, I think it was in Milwaukee just last month. And they brought in speakers from the World Curling Federation, and there were all of these clubs, not all arena clubs, but dedicated clubs and arena clubs, sitting down together, talking about all of the mechanics of how you run a curling club, like the business side of running a curling club. And, you know, it was minimal cost to attend, and it was great content. So I think we get a ton of support from U.S. Curling Association.
Well, I want to come down. I haven't been there yet. I do want to curl the pirate spiel. Could you tell us a little bit about the pirate spiel?
Pirate spiel is a lot of fun. If you want to find a bunch of
adults
dressed up like pirates and acting like children, this is the place for you. Our inspiration for the pirate spiel is that it is on the same weekend as International Talk Like a Pirate Day. Are you guys familiar with that holiday?
I am.
In air quotes?
I am. Okay. Yeah.
So we just decided we needed something unique, and we wanted to do a September spiel, so we settled on the pirate spiel. And we have, the largest we've had is 24 teams. Usually we have more in the high teens, but 24 is a great number if we can get them. And it's a very social spiel with great hospitality. Our Friday night is always our homebrew night. We have a bunch of curlers in our club who are homebrewers, and they all homebrew 5-gallon tanks and bring them in. So we have homebrew and home cider on Friday night until it's gone. And then we have all kinds of fun pirate games, and it's a great bond spiel.
That sounds really fun. I went as he kind of looks like a pirate. One night at the Mixed League, it occurred on actual Halloween, October 31st, Friday, 2 years ago. And I went as David Bowie from Labyrinth, who kind of resembles sort of a weird, disturbing pirate of sorts. And for younger curlers and people who were there that night, cause a lot of, parents show up with their kids, and one of them will watch the kid and the other will be curling. people would run up to me and go, "You're a pirate." I'd say, "No, I'm not."
Well, then you have a built-in costume.
Yeah, yeah. I still got the boots.
It kind of sounds, which I think is pretty interesting to me, that you're, that this club is only on Sundays. And it seems like the whole, not the whole club, but when you get there, there's a big setup and probably a big teardown, I imagine. And so that's probably a large part of the social interaction, is getting the club set up. Like Chris was talking about how, you know, one of the big things is that the stones are warm, mm-hmm. and you have to cool them down. So you got to move them around the ice.
Yep. Teardown is surprisingly quick because you've got 40 people on the ice and everybody picks up two rocks and it's done in about 10, 15 minutes. But setup takes about an hour. And part of it is because we have to move, you know, I think it's 3 tons of granite on the ice, shift them around while they're cooling, carry out scoreboards, shave the ice, lay hacks, pebble. And we compress all that into about an hour. But the only way that works is if we have volunteers. So what we typically do is, in our whatever our first draw of the night is, we assign teams during the season to be setup teams. And so 2 or 3 teams are assigned to come an hour early and help with setup. So essentially all club members learn how to help set up the ice.
That's really cool. A buddy of mine, a former teammate of ours, now curls in Eau Claire full-time. And the way they do meals over there is that on various nights, entire teams are expected to each bring a large meal to feed people. So you'll have 4 or 5 teams out of maybe, 16 or 20, show up with plates of food. And he says it's really a fun way to meet people.
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of you get a little skin in the game and you start meeting people and it builds community, which is right. Fantastic.
And even though we don't have a bar and restaurant on site, which most curling clubs would, we do have a standard broomstack location, and teams go out after and the after curling to sit down for broomstacking. And unfortunately, this year our broomstacking has been competing with Game of Thrones, and I have a few words for that show. Stealing my broomstack.
Take it, you haven't watched Game of Thrones.
I have watched it, but I can watch it on DVR or on demand. I don't have to go home on Sunday night.
I only watched the first season, and then I got kind of bored with it. I was doing a little deep, deep, deep research about you, and I found that either you currently do this or you do it in the past or used to do it. You used to have a Guy Fox night.
Good research. Yes, in fact, we do still host Guy Fox night.
I didn't know anything about it, and I was reading the Wikipedia, and I was like, this is a hell of a party topic.
It's an awesome party, in fact. My husband, Paul, is English, and we decided we wanted to have sort of our own holiday that didn't compete with anyone else, and so we decided to start hosting a Guy Fox night bonfire. And Guy Fox night is quite a big holiday in England, and you know, there'll be whole citywide fireworks displays and parades and, you know, community parties, and it's a major, major event. So Guy Fawkes Day in England is celebrating the historical event in which a guy named Guy Fawkes and his conspirators attempted to blow up the Houses of Parliament, and they were captured in the basement just before they were able to light the wick. And there's, you know, half the country is celebrating the fact that they were caught, and the other half is celebrating the fact that they tried. So it's, I think, 400 years old or so at this point. And Paul and I started hosting this Guy Fox night party, and 15 years ago, it was maybe 30 people. And I think at our largest, we've had 200.
Well, you're ahead of the curve again, just like the DCC, because I'm sure after V for Vendetta came out, all of a sudden your neighbors say, maybe there's something going on at this Guy Fox night.
Yeah, we in fact put a sign out at the end of our driveway the week before the party, just saying Guy Fox night with a date and time. Neighbors are welcome. And we have complete strangers show up every year. We have our guests bring their own guests. It's a lot of fun.
That's great.
We have Morris dancers, which is a traditional English folk dance tradition, and they come and sing and dance and perform. One year we had a live band when it was held on a Saturday night, and that was a fun thing to do. And in general, there's, you know, it's like a giant potluck. So Paul and I provide a keg of beer and some you know, chicken wings and things like that. And everyone else brings potluck. If you've ever been to a potluck with 200 people, it's pretty diverse. We had a fun experience one year in which, as people started to arrive to the party, they kept coming up to us and saying, "Do you know there's a police officer down at the end of your driveway?" And we said, "No." And more and more people kept coming in and saying, "There's a police officer at the end of your driveway, and he's telling everyone who arrives that they have to go in the house immediately." And I kept saying, "I've got 200 people coming. They're not going in my house. So what's going on?" And it turns out that there was a burglar in the neighborhood just up the street from us. And the area I live in is sort of rural or wooded. And there was a house burglar that they were trying to find. And so they had blocked the road at the end of my driveway and were not letting anyone go in any farther into the neighborhood. They had helicopters with searchlights trying to search through the woods. And I kept telling people, well, if the police want us to all come inside, they're going to have to drive up here and explain that directly. Because once they get up here and they see 150 people standing in my barn, it's not possible really to put them in the house.
There's probably the cop or the burglar was probably enjoying the party.
Yeah, you said a bunch of strangers showed up.
You know, if anybody had just wandered in through from the woods, I would never have noticed.
Did you have masks for everybody? Guy Fawkes masks?
We use little paper masks for the kids to color. It's a very family-friendly party, so there are kids running all over the
place.
Because
that would have been truly a little bit creepy if you'd had 100, 150 people with the Guy Fawkes masks as the helicopters and their searchlights were zooming overhead. Anyway.
In this day and age, it might not have been safe to have the police come upon that scene.
How did you meet your English husband, Paul?
Now that is a good question.
Well, we actually met in a personal ad in the newspaper.
Which newspaper? Where?
Star Tribune.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
This is before Match.com even existed. It was like old-fashioned advertisement in the newspaper.
Do you like bangers and mash?
Do you like fish and chips?
Now, bangers and mash is probably Irish or Scottish, right?
No, that's bangers and mash. I believe that's Scottish. I'm not 100% positive. But no, actually, I don't eat meat, so.
What was your first date like? Did you know he was English?
I did know he was English. So the way the advertisement worked was, it was just like a little, like a classified ad in the newspaper. And there was a phone number you called up, and it was a voicemail box. And the person leaving the ad just gave a little, like, welcome announcement. And then you're supposed to record a message and leave your name and number. And his advertisement said nothing at all about him being English. So I didn't know until I called and heard his accent. And I kind of freaked out and hung up and didn't leave my name. And about a half hour later, I was still thinking about it. And I thought, well, what do you have to lose? Call back and leave your name. So I did. And that's how I learned that he was English. Well, interestingly enough, that was the only personal ad I answered. It was kind of a personal dare that I answered it on. Our first date was at Pepito's.
Right up here.
Right near here. Yep. Yeah. We had a great time. And actually a very funny, I think it was our second date. He had called up and said, "Hey, I've got some time. I want to see you on Saturday." And I think I said, "Well, I have a very tight schedule and I need to go grocery shopping on Saturday morning." And he said, "Well, I'll come along." So I think we went grocery shopping on our second date.
What in the ad made you want to call him?
I thought his ad was really honest. So I don't remember all the details, but I think he said something like he was looking for a woman who was both beautiful and smart. And I thought that any guy who says they're only looking for a smart woman is lying. And any guy who says only looking for a beautiful woman is shallow. And I thought, if someone says they want both and they kind of believe they deserve it all. And I thought I liked the sense of confidence and honesty in that statement.
Some nice critical thinking really quickly. That's good.
You're so smart.
And beautiful.
And beautiful. Absolutely.
I asked you about what other Bonspiels that you had gone on, and you didn't answer the Hollywood curling Bonspiel, which was what I was really going for, because I had a team loosely put together. I bought the last team spot that they had, and I was all planning on going, and then it all kind of fell apart. So I went fishing instead, which was fine. But I saw on Facebook and social media how much fun everybody was having at the Hollywood Curling Club in Hollywood, California.
Yes, we played that spiel for the first time this year and had an absolute blast. I would go back again in a heartbeat. It was kind of a fun theme, and they had neat connections with, like, actual celebrities. Well, actual, like, B-grade celebrities.
Hey, show up. Let's not knock Seventh Heaven here. Chris told me he's a big fan of WGN/CW.
You should probably edit that out in case she ever listens
Seventh
to this.
Heaven.
No, I used to watch
You're
that
the
show.
One who said B celebrity.
I did.
I totally recognized no her when I saw now. Your picture.
There were very few of the celebrities. She's one that I did recognize, but there were a lot of the celebrities that I read their bios and I didn't watch the shows they were in.
Also from the WB.
Yeah. So I was like, who are you? But sadly, the two celebrities I was most interested in playing with didn't show up at the last minute. So one was Will Wheaton, who played Wesley Crusher. That I'm a huge, huge Star Trek nerd.
See, I knew we'd get along. We'd get to this sooner or later. Here it comes, Battlestar. And so you watched Firefly? He was a big Firefly guy.
No, I didn't watch that. But I've heard good things about that.
See, I like him because he's into board games. Anyway, go ahead.
Then the other celebrity that I was excited about was AJ Milne.
Hawk?
No, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his last name right. But he's the actor who played the son on Breaking Bad. The one with cerebral palsy.
Oh, the pancakes guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, I was so excited when I saw him. And in fact, he was paired with Colin Hodgson. So it was one Hollywood celebrity and one curling celebrity. And then the other two spots on the team were one went to the highest bidder and the other went to someone who won a raffle prize. So Colin was teamed up with AJ Milne, and I was totally bidding on them as a pair. And then I think at the last minute, AJ had some kind of a family emergency and had to bow out, in which case the gal from Seventh Heaven stepped in.
Probably meth related.
No, I think it was I think it was a death in the family. That's what I heard, but I don't know.
How death related? Jeez,
yeah. I'm an editor. We don't have hearts.
So that was really fun. So we played the rest of the spiel is just a regular normal, you know, four event spiel. But then on Saturday night they had the celebrity match that I was just describing with the Hollywood celebrity and a curling celebrity, and it's just, you know, four ends, and it's a lot of goofing off and, you know, throwing frisbees while you're curling. And
did you see a lot of celebrities fall?
I did, yes.
How'd that make you feel?
I'm glad I wasn't one of them.
Who's cold now?
I'm just wondering. I do notice that Hollywood Curling Club, I noticed they sponsored Schuster's team.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Which I thought was kind of interesting. Like, why would a team, like, why would Hollywood Curling sponsor, you know, a national team like that? What are they going to try to get out of it? Or
I didn't even know that was
not why are they going to get out of it. But I just noticed on their jerseys they have a little Hollywood Curling thing.
Well, when they were casting Mad Men, it was either John Hamm or John Schuster, and unfortunately for Schusty, they chose John Hamm. So I think that was you know, they're like, well, we can't do. We can do this for you.
You know, I just don't, I can't see him in that role.
You don't know John Schuster then?
Yeah, I don't even know the TV show, actually.
It's getting shut down here. So, before we started recording, you curled out in Hollywood with Mr. Curling Zone guy, Jerry.
Yes, I curled with Jerry Gertz from Curling Zone and Colin Hodgson, who's the lead on Reed Carruthers' team.
Okay, so can you, and I don't know if you can you explain the, is Curling Zone connected to the U.S. Curling Association in any official capacity? Because we had spoken about how Jerry, it's really a one-man show and does it all himself, and it's great.
You know, I just met Jerry for the first time last weekend, and I'm not an expert at all in how his organization works, but I understand that the U.S. Curling Association and other events, I believe, contract with him to help manage their stats, but I really don't know any details, I'm afraid.
Okay, thank you.
Having curled with him and knowing that he's a one, and being in the IT world, knowing he's a one-man shop, do you think that Curling Zone is in capable hands?
I'm very impressed, actually. I sort of assumed that there was more more support behind the scenes, but that's one guy's work. That's pretty impressive.
It does seem pretty extensive. Like, like I did research on your Arena Nationals, and you go to the U.S. Curling website, and then you click a button, and the stats that it's pulling up is from Curling Zone, which that's, I don't know how long he's been doing it, but he's pretty ingrained into the fabric of international curling, it seems like.
Yeah, it seems like he's got an awful lot of connections, and I don't know his whole history and how we established those connections. I think you should invite him to be a podcast guest.
Sounds good.
I think he's earned it. I mean, when he emailed us out of the blue really early in the pod, I mean, we couldn't have had more than 6 or 8 episodes. This is only number 12. And I guess, you know, he introduced himself, and we said, great, yeah, let's do it. And I said, oh, this must be Curling Zone's marketing guy or their outreach community guy. It turns out he's the whole guy. So that's really great. Thank you, Jerry. So
yeah.
Darcy, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Darcy, for coming on the pod.
I had a great time.
Congratulations on the second place finish, the silver medal.
Very proud of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, got a rubber match coming up.
Yep.
Someone's got to come out on top of this rivalry.
Exactly. We'll have to. I was kind of hoping that I'd run into Sarah at the Hollywood Bonspiel, but she wasn't there. Apparently, she was at Orange City the weekend before.
Probably afraid of the next match.
Somehow, I don't think so.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot. We really appreciate it.
Thanks. I had a great time. It was fun talking to you guys.
Thank you. Cheers.